On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, before we get into this episode, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor. This podcast episode is brought to you by Timeline Nutrition. Did you know 90% of the food you eat and air you breathe is converted to cellular energy by our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria? Exhausting physical demands, constant travel, and irregular sleep and recovery all damage the mitochondria, resulting in less energy. For the first time, Timeline Nutrition has the ability to rebuild and restore the energy generators, leading to elevated cellular energy and improved performance. Timeline Nutrition, the first and only NSF-certified, clinically tested, highly pure urolithin A, has been shown in clinical studies to improve muscular strength, muscular endurance, and reduce markers of cellular inflammation. Success on the diamond or in the office depends on getting the fundamentals right. Nothing is more fundamental than supporting good health at its core. See for yourself with a 3-day free starter kit of Timeline Nutrition. Use code MLBFREE at timelinenutrition.com/MLB. Thank you to Timeline Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. With that being said, let's get into the interview with Brett.
It's a fun game, and it can be frustrating. It can be overwhelming. It can be everything in between. If you don't have force plates, what other recommendations do you have for player monitoring in terms of just like that fatigue and that readiness aspect?
Yep, no, absolutely. I mean, there's so much technology out nowadays to kind of supplement how you can monitor athletes. I think if you don't have access to force plates, I mean, I know people that use jump mats and they go off jump height. Am I the biggest fan of jump mats? No, but it's also something and it's not nothing. I think further to that point, I think questionnaires are good. I think GPS is good, whether it's pole or a catapult. I think there's always resources that somebody can reach for depending on the time and budget, essentially. But my biggest thing is like the realm of strength and conditioning is transitioning into the sports science field. I do envision many strength coaches probably having to have like a sports science background or a sports science certification down the road. Are we there yet? No, but I think that's something that strength coaches are going to have to utilize to their advantage. So I think just finding resources that or a means of monitoring is probably, you know, the best bet, whether it's GPS, questionnaires, or, you know, even jump mats.
Yeah, and I'll take that one a step further. I agree with you. The direction of strength and conditioning, for me, that's sports science, but then also taking that sports science and connecting it to on-field performance, I think is ultimately where, at least in this game and in baseball, I think that's where that's going. I can't speak on anything else because I don't know anything else, to be honest. But I think at least in our game, in the professional setting, there are a lot of coaches who are either CSCS, they have exercise science backgrounds. My youngest brother is going to school for exercise science now, and I keep telling him, like, don't be a strength coach. Be a baseball coach who knows strength and conditioning, who knows exercise science, who knows sports science. That's going to make you really valuable is because you can connect those dots. If you're my traditional background of strength and conditioning is really good program design, really staying in the weight room and letting the coaches take care of the on-field stuff. And it's helped me a lot with my program design. And when a coach comes to me, I can make those adjustments for our players. But I think the direction of the field is going more, the strength coach has to take the initiative to influence on-field performance versus the coach coming to the strength coach. It's almost like we go to them with the data to say, this is how this guy can get better, and almost taking it that way. I have my thoughts on that, good and bad. And I do think young strength coaches coming up probably don't have as good of a background in program design and long-term outlook. And I think some of that is because there's so much focus on, you know, the other stuff, the sports science stuff. But at the same time, if that's what the field is going for and that's the direction it's going in and that's going to get you a job and pay your money and like take care of your bills and your family, like that's what you have to do. And so for me, like I learned the programming really well and I've learned the science along the way. Like I think the next wave coming up is going to know the science really well and have to learn the coaching and the programming and being on the floor as they go. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like everything in life. There's a pendulum, there's a, you know, a spectrum that things kind of fall on. And I think we've kind of gone to the other side of that. And it's not to say it's good or bad. It's just like everything, there is good and there is bad to it. But I would agree with you. I think that's the way the field is going. I think young coaches probably could get a leg up on others by learning that sports science. And specifically if they want to get into baseball, like understanding the game of baseball, I think will help you tremendously if this is the game you want to get into.
Absolutely.
Let's kind of go along that. What advice do you have for others in the field? Obviously, we're talking about learning the sports science aspect. Are there any other pieces of advice that you'd have?
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing for like specifically like younger strength coaches, like looking into the field of especially baseball and strength conditioning, it's just like I often get questions of like, okay, well, how do you even get started? And it's like, okay, well, obviously the education background of kinesiology, exercise physiology, psychology, like that is the necessary components to first get your educational background through the collegiate setting. From there, it's like get as much experience as you possibly can, whether it's at your local gym, your local facility, but also just like network to people. Like I remember when I first wanted to get into professional baseball, like I sat at literally this kitchen table and I sent out 90 emails probably within three hours. And it was to every single MLB team, every single team. And it was just like getting your name out there, but also just like seeking advice, seeking information, seeking opportunities. It's just like trying to create that name for yourself so you can be exposed into the opportunity that might, you know, head your way. If it's like, hey, I'm networking, it's like, okay, like how many you send out a day? It's like, you know, like two on LinkedIn. It's like, I literally woke up and it was like, how many can I send like all day today? It doesn't have to be like, can I have a job? It's like, hey, like, I have a question about this topic. And it's like, hey, I just want to learn more about this, learn more about your story. Like, how did you get to your position? It's like, those are valuable conversations that need to be had in order for you to like detail how you want to get within professional baseball. Cause I mean, it's not the easiest field to get into. And it's a lot of hard work and it's traveling every single day and you're playing every single day. It's like, there's a lot that goes into it. So I think just making those connections and having those conversations to really truly understand what sport and what realm of strength and conditioning you want to get into.
Yeah. And that, I think that can be really daunting for people. I can remember when I was in grad school looking for internships, like some of the emails I sent and my resume were just so bad. Not that they're good now, but just like it makes me cringe thinking about it. But at the same time, like I did it. And at the end of the day, like if something would have came of those, great. And the fact that nothing came of them, like the worst possible scenario is like I just cringe about it 10 years later. It's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's not like it doesn't ever come up in my mind other than for 2 seconds that I'm like, God, that was a terrible email. And then I move on with my life. So like, if you're on the fence about it, just do it. And personally, if you ever emailed me and if I didn't email back, I'm really sorry. I'm not great with emails. But there have been people who have reached out to me out of the blue. We've talked shop and, you know, a part-time position opens somewhere or a low-level position opens entry-level with somebody else. And I call them. I'm like, hey, I had a good phone conversation with this guy or this gal. Like, it's probably worth at least calling them to see. And it works out for them. You know what I mean? So you just never know who's going to connect you to who. And I think within the baseball world, I've had this conversation with a few people recently, is like, you're pretty much just like 1 degree removed from anybody you want to talk to. Like if somebody reaches out to me I have a lot of people I've interviewed on the podcast that I could reach out to for them. You know what I mean? If you yourself, you want to reach out to X, Y, and Z, you don't feel comfortable doing it, but you've reached out to me and we've made that connection, I can put you in touch with them or somebody else. Like, but my boss knows everybody in baseball. So like, if there's anybody I want to reach out to, I just ask him. And if there's somebody that he doesn't know, he asks me, and usually I have at least some sort of connection. So the baseball world, as big as it is with all the affiliates and everything, it really is kind of a small community. And I think to your point is like, if you just get your name into the community, at some point, someone along the way is going to connect you to somebody else that's going to get you your foot in the door. But if you don't take that first step and take that initiative, you're never going to find out. You know what I mean? So it's like, when you're on the fence, like, send the email. The worst case scenario is like that you just don't hear back. You know what I mean? And like, that happens. Yeah. Everybody's busy. It's nothing personal. And on the rare account that like you do get an email back, like, you never know where that can lead. So I agree with you 100% there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like, I remember trying like emailing Corey Kennedy with the Cubs, and it was a simple, like, I just wanted a foot in the door. Like, I was going to work for free. I just wanted an internship. Like, I just wanted to start, just get my foot in the door. Sent a couple emails, had good conversations back. Nothing was available, essentially. So then I started looking at, because in Canada, you can't really do a strength internship anyways. You have to go to the States. So I looked at the University of Iowa. So literally packed my bags, moved to Iowa City, found an Airbnb, was there for literally 4 weeks, like 4 weeks of an internship. Corey calls, hey, something opened up, like, internship, still don't have it because it's pre-COVID, but do you want to go work in the Dominican? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Hopped on a phone call, went over logistics, and then boom, like, walked into the baseball turf in the football facility, said bye to everybody. And it was like, that was the start of the professional baseball journey. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've said my story before. I was in grad school. I saw the Pirates were hiring. I knew it was in the middle of spring training. I knew it was going to be a fast hire. I was like, I'll put my name in. And by the time I applied, interviewed, and moved to Florida, it was about a week, week and a half. Like, just, it happened like this. You just never know. And I always think about if, like, you know, maybe I just put that application off for the next day. Like, maybe I don't get that call and it doesn't put me down this path. And you just never know where it's going to take you. But I think the main point here is, like, if you don't send that email, it's never going to come to anything, right? Like, it's the Michael Scott quote of, like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take or whatever, like that, you know. It's joking on an actual quote, but like the relevance of it is very real. Like, if you don't shoot your shot, like, you don't ever have a chance to score. So I couldn't agree with you more there. And then, you know, along the lines of, like, now that you're in the game, you've seen it a little bit, like, what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe just in general, and then specifically in professional baseball.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like, I could sit here and talk about, you know, exercise physiology and program design and movement, and like, those are all valuable attributes to what a good strength and conditioning coach is. I think, like, you have to be a coach. Like, that's definitely the job that you signed up for. But I think, like, a very important aspect of it is, like, just have some feel with your players. I mean, that's your job as well. Like, you're supposed to be approachable. You have to build bonds with them. You have to build relationships. You have to also build routines with them. You can't offer them a routine without even knowing them. You know what I mean? Like, you have to dive deep into it. Like, where do they go to school? Where are you from? Like, where's your family located? Where do you live in the offseason? Like, you should take initiative to, like, actually understand your players and where they came from, because the best part is, like, everybody's got a different story, and it's really fascinating to listen to. Some guys went Division I, some guys went JUCO. It's like, it's really interesting to learn more about your players. And from that, they care about you and they want you to benefit from you, and they want to actually listen to you. So I think, like, having the field component is a really important aspect. Like, I'm back here in Okotoks, Alberta, and I went to a baseball academy. This is where I moved out here. I basically never left. But we have minor league players back. And it's like, I would ask them, it's like, hey, like, how was your year? Like, was strength coach like? Like, how was everything? And like the ones that they really, really loved, they could talk shit with, like they got along with, like, again, they had feel like they had an actual relationship with them. And that's the ones that they loved most. So I think that's just like the biggest thing is just have some feel. It could be anything from obviously the relationship aspect, but if it's like a Saturday mid-afternoon game and or not mid-afternoon, but you're out practicing at mid-afternoon, stretching, and you're on turf and it's 32 degrees, which is Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but that's pretty hot. and they're dogging it. It's like probably not going to do it, you know, 10 to 12 dynamic stretch. Like, let's just do a circle stretch and give everybody some love. Like stuff like that, that goes a long way for the guys.
Yeah. So all relevant points. Also the 32 degrees, if it's Fahrenheit, you also have to have some feel there and like be aware of like being cold versus being 32 degrees Celsius being really hot. American units, right? Not
that's fair.
You have to make sure that you know the transition from one to the other there. But no, I think those are all really good points. And I think going back to what we were talking about earlier is just like sometimes young coaches are a little bit robotic and the coaching aspect and the human aspect gets lost in the data. It's something I was having a conversation with someone today, actually. It's just like the more data there is, the less like human side of things there is. And I think that really does go a long way. It's like if you can just talk shit with guys and like be a human and be normal and act normal around them, like it goes a long way because they are bombarded with data all the time and they want to use it, but sometimes they just need somebody to like make a joke with and like have some fun with. And so I think you have to be able to do both of those really well. And I think, like I said earlier, this next batch of young coaches, I think that's where they're going to make big strides because a lot of them are so smart with the science side and all of the monitoring and everything. And it gets lost on them how to coach. And like, we have assistants, we have interns, and I can see it. They know all the ins and outs of the data, the technology. And then it's like, go coach this group on the floor and they freeze. And it's like, that's where you're going to make your biggest impact is learning to coach those coaches or those players. But again, it's finding that balance of both. And I think in this game, especially, we spend so much time together that you really have to be a human or you just kind of isolate yourself pretty aggressively in the group.
Yep. No, absolutely.
So let's go continuing ed resources. What kind of books are you reading, seminars you're attending, podcasts you're listening to? Where are you going to stay on top of things?
Right now, I'm just wrapping up my master's degree, exercise science. So that's been a big component that I wanted to get done. I got in the field early, so I wanted to get that master's done through an online resource. So I'm wrapping that up, so I'm happy to get that done. And then Essentials of Sports Science, that's another big one. I also want to get certified in that. So I've been kind of crushing that book. And then kind of on the side of sports science, I've been going back through Calathes, the Triphasic Training book, just kind of like reading about the philosophies again. I'm sure many strength coaches probably have read that book, but it's always refreshing just to kind of reread it, go back through it, kind of diving deep into concentric training and stuff like that in regards to, in-season training for athletes and how much eccentric stress equals resiliency and how much stress is too much stress. So kind of diving deep into that stuff. And then podcasts, mainly Just Fly Performance. And then obviously this one, I think you can get a realm of, different characters on both podcasts and you learn a lot about not only like the topics that you're discussing, but like how people present themselves and how people talk about their certain philosophies and their experiences. And like, I think that's valuable information as well, versus just always being like educational. I think it's good to branch out and listen to just how people approach, daily conversations, to be completely honest.
Yeah. I actually, one of my buddies was like, can I crack a beer on this? And I was like, dude, you can do it. If that makes you feel comfortable to talk with me, like you do whatever you got to do. I want this to be more of a real conversation and less of a robotic, kind of forced conversation. Yep. And then you talk about your master's degree. So where are you doing your schooling and how chaotic was that during the season, like classes wise?
Yeah. So I did it through Liberty University. And it was, highly chaotic throughout the year, pretty much. I mean, in season is tough when you're doing, you know, three classes and you got papers to write, and it's like, it's obviously a lot to handle, but it's just a matter of, like, for me personally, it's just like, go, go, go. Like, just get it done. Like, you want to get it done. I was determined to get it done. It didn't really matter how late I was up or how early, like, you know, ATs and strength coaches are usually probably the first ones in the building besides the clubby. So it's like, just get there early, get your workout in, take care of your own health, and then take care of the educational component along the way as well. So, I mean, it was a good balance for me. I'd be lying if I said it was easy, but I guess I just had like the motivation to get it done and have that fine balance. There was a lot of coffee being intake for sure. Caffeine intake was through the roof, especially in August. But at the end of the day, it all got done.
Yeah, I think it's probably valuable to say, like, when you're young and you have the energy and you want to grind, like, grind as hard as you can. Because there's going to come a point where when you get older that it punches you in the face. And sometimes it's at 30, sometimes it's at 50. And I've met people that still have a ton of energy and can go in their 60s. And I've met people that are gassed out at 25 and everywhere in between. So it's like, even with our players, you know what I mean? And we've had guys that are, you know, pushing 40 in our clubhouse. And we've had guys that are, you know, like 20, 21, 22, like, if you have that energy and you have that willpower and that desire and that motivation, like, let it rip, get everything you can accomplished while you can, and like, go from there. I graduated undergrad in 3 years. I had my master's degree by the time I got into pro ball, and it was like, I did not stop. It was just like, I went right from undergrad, right to grad school. I got into pro ball while I was still in grad school. I finished grad school online during my first year in pro ball. Like, I was trying to get everything I could done because I had the energy. I felt like I would go to bed sometimes at 1 o'clock and I would wake up at 4 to go for our training groups and work 12, 13, 14 hours a day. Like, it didn't matter. You know what I mean? And now I look back on that and I'm, you know, I'm not old, I'm 31, but I'm like, wow, I couldn't do that. I don't know if I could. And I think probably deep down, it's probably still there. We're all crazy enough to do it. It's just like, at what cost? So like, if you got the motivation to do it, I say just do it. And most of us, the one good thing with strength coaches, most of us are good with time management. So if you give us 19 different tasks and tell us to finish a master's degree on top of it, like, we'll do it. We'll figure it out. It's going to come at the expense of, like, short term, our health is probably going to struggle. We're going to drink a lot of coffee. But long term, like, having that degree, like, people can't take that away from you, right? And so for me, that's kind of something that, like, I always was just, at some point I'm going to hit a wall. And when I hit that wall, I want to be running as hard and as fast as I possibly can. And hopefully I break the wall. And if the wall breaks me, at least I accomplish things along the way. So yeah, I can totally see it. I finished my master's during spring training before, like, in extended before the season started my first year online. So I got a little taste of it, but I wasn't doing like the full season, August road trips. Like, I had finished it by the time we broke for the affiliate, but I can only imagine the lack of sleep some nights.
Well, lack of sleep was just unbearable. I mean, sometimes your games are done at, like, you know, you're getting close to midnight the time you get back to the hotel, and it's just like, oh yeah, like, I got a paper due tomorrow. It's like, I gotta really type that out. So, and then you got gym bus in the morning and you're just like, all right, well, I'm not sleeping tonight.
I mean, sleep is at a premium anyways during the season, even without doing a master's degree. So just adding on top of it, you're like, what's another hour of sleep that I'm missing? Who cares?
Exactly.
It's been good getting to know you, man. I've really had a good time talking with you. I want to do a lightning round before we get you going. Just 4 questions, as long or as short of answers, and then I promise I'll get you out if you're cool with it.
All right, sounds good.
Awesome. First one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to be one.
That's okay.
I think I'll do like what first started with like me getting into coaching, essentially, probably like when I was super young, probably being a little shit. And my dad basically sat me down and was basically like, hey, like, do you want to be a leader or do you want to be a follower? Because like you're following a lot of people right now. And I'm like 10, 12, you know, just trying to like live my life and have fun, right? But he basically was like, hey, you're just following the crowd. Like, do you want to lead people or do you want to just keep following? Because that's going to set you up for especially what you want to do as you get later into your teen years, but obviously your 20s where I'm at now. So that was kind of like a big, that was like a coaching moment for me of like, yeah, you're right. Like, I want to like be a leader. I want people to hopefully look up to me and not say follow me, but, you know, ask questions along the way of how you might have got yourself in a certain, you know, circumstance or certain position. So I think that was the first one. It was like my dad in regards to coaching, coached me a lot throughout when I was younger. So he had definitely had a big influence. And then we touched on it a little bit earlier, but just like I moved away from home at 15 to go to a baseball academy on the complete opposite side of the country. So I basically got a scholarship to come out where I'm at now, which is Okotoks, the Okotoks Dogs Academy. And here is just why I fell in love with strength and conditioning. Like I got here and in Canada, it's grade 11 and 12. So grade 11, like grade 12, you graduate, grade 11, got here, I'm like 170 pounds. And then like the grade 12s, like seniors, they're like 215 pounds. Exit view was like 105. And I'm like, okay, like I got some serious work to do. So that's kind of where I fell in love with like the realm of strength and conditioning, how it could benefit your performance. Cause I saw it. It was like, I'm so much smaller than everybody else and I'm not performing like everybody else. So I think Brett Guthrow, the strength coach here at the academy, who's still here till this day, like I owe him a lot. Like he showed me the realm of strength and conditioning and exercise physiology and how movement can, you know, enhance your performance on the field. So I owe him a lot. I think the last two would probably be Corey Kennedy, the first one to give me opportunity in pro ball. And then John Abbott, who's still the sports scientist at the Cubs to this day. And I still have great conversations with both of them. I think like for most people, you're probably not going to forget who gave you your first opportunity. So those two obviously will always have, you know, a special place to me because they gave me that opportunity. And I mean, they took a chance on me, you know, as a young kid trying to figure it out. Like they saw something and they're just like, yeah, let's run with this. So, I mean, I owe all those people a lot.
If you only had one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Barbell. You do so many things with that.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I would say getting into pro ball, continue to keep climbing the ranks, but also just like I've been fortunate enough to move up with some of my players, but seeing them keep getting promoted, I think that's an amazing accomplishment when that manager gives that speech. You know, most times when after the game for us, but it's like, okay, everybody goes crazy and you get that big hug at the end. And it's like, that's a special feeling. So I would definitely put that up there.
Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I would say I want to go to culinary school originally. So I would say like being a chef. I cook so much. And then real estate. I love real estate. It's almost a disease. I got a couple properties and it's just like, what else could I possibly get? So I think those two occupations would be right up my alley too.
Brett, it's been great to get to know you. As I had said before we talked, Donnie spoke very highly of you. And I value Donnie's opinion. And when he told me to have you on, I knew I had to have you on. And I'm glad he sent me your way. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Is social media the best place? Email? Where can we reach out?
Yeah, social media, just Brett Plotz is a username. And then, yeah, just reach out to me through that. DM me, ask me questions. Like, I'm all for communication, having elaborate conversations. And I mean, at the end of the day, it all makes us better.
I appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of the offseason. Enjoy your trip when you go. And good luck this season with the promotion, man. We'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. That's going to conclude part two of this two-part interview with Brett. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was good to get to know him. It was good to hear his thoughts on the field and on sports science. And I would definitely recommend checking out his article on Simply Faster that we mentioned in part one. The three things that I took from Brett in this episode: be diligent with your outreach and networking opportunities. A good coach has a combination of education, feel, and quality communication skills. And understanding the future of the field can help guide decisions on continuing education. Before we sign off, I want to give one more shout out to our sponsor, Timeline Nutrition, and wanted to remind you that you can get a free 3-day starter kit of Timeline Nutrition using the code MLBFREE at timelinenutrition.com/MLB. Thank you to our sponsor and thank you to our guest. And with that being said, we'll talk to you again on the next one.